Tonight we want to look at the Bible commands for fellowship. Perhaps fellowship has come to mean something far more frivolous today than what the Bible intended it to be. Somebody said fellowship is two or more fellows in one ship, and I don't much like that. I don't think that really carries much meaning. A bunch of us seasick here. But it does mean participating in being fellows with one another, and that perhaps has lost its meaning. The idea of the Bible concerning this we find in all of the one another verses. They speak of the duties of fellowship while at church. Let me tell you a story. I've told it before, but it bears repeating at this point. The story of the pastor that went to see the man who had been neglecting church. And he said, well, I think I can worship God when I'm by myself or if I'm on the riverbank fishing and so on. And the pastor said, well, indeed, you can worship God, and certainly you should. Whether you actually do or not, that's another question, but you really could and should. But that has very little to do with the question of you coming to church. And in that day and age, they had the fire burning, and the fire had gone down to just the burning coals, glowing coals. And so the pastor said, we need each other to stay excited and energized about the Lord. Now, he took the tongs from the fireplace there, and he reached in, took one of the glowing coals, put it all by itself on the hearth, and then just watched it. The man's thinking, what in the world is he doing? So he just watched. And the one that was by itself grew dark and cold, being isolated, while at the same time, all the other coals sharing that heat stayed glowing. And the man said, that's all you needed to say, Pastor. I'll be there Sunday. Well, notice what God expects us to do. What does he expect us to do? And are we doing it? In Romans, and you have it there, so I won't have to read all the references there. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. So now we approach each other, preferring them over us, which is the very heart of love. Owe no man anything but to love one another. Again, this is that whole characteristic of 1 Corinthians 13, of what love really is. We're to do that one with another. Let us not therefore judge one another anymore, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. The idea here is that we may do something that we know that a lot of people don't think is a right thing. And we have our just reasons for doing it, our justifications perhaps. The thing is, don't flaunt that type of thing before others, because it could be a stumbling block. And it would be worse for you to be a stumbling block than to be restricted on something that you actually could do if you wanted to. Then it says, wherefore receive ye one another, as Christ also received us to the glory of God. So how did Christ receive us? Did he wait till we were perfect? Did he wait till we were the most loving creatures and then received us? The answer, of course, is no. But he received us as we were, and then tried in love to make us better. That's how we're to receive one another. Then I myself also am persuaded of you, my brethren, that you also are full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, able also to admonish one another. And I think it's interesting, being full of goodness and filled with knowledge, you are now enabled to admonish one another. And the admonish here would be to encourage, to enhearten, but to admonish sometimes, to say, is that really the best thing you ought to be doing? And then finally in Romans, salute one another with an holy kiss. And of course, this was that culture's way of greeting them with an act of love. Then in 1 Corinthians, all the brethren greet you one another with an holy kiss. 2 Corinthians, greet you one another with a holy kiss. When you greet someone, make it personal, make it actual heart-to-heart meaning. Deliver yourself to them as you greet them. I think that's what this means. In Galatians, for brethren, you have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, which would cause others to stumble, but by love serve one another. Then again, bear ye one another's burdens, so fulfill the law of Christ. And how will you know if they have a burden? You have to ask. You have to engage in some sort of conversation about this. You have to look at a person and say, is everything all right with you? No, really. Because we always pass those things off. In Ephesians, with all lowliness and meekness, with long suffering, forbearing one another in love. Let's be patient. Let's be understanding. We've had problems. Again, be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another. Don't be quick to hold that grudge. Forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. So for Christ's sake, you forgive one another. In Colossians, forbearing one another and forgiving one another, if any man have a quarrel against any. Even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. Let us be formed in that image of Christ. Again in Colossians, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in, and here's our music ministry, in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. Doesn't mention anything about special talent of music and all of that, but singing with grace in your heart. When people can read in your face the joy of the Lord in the songs, you have a testimony to them. 1 Thessalonians. But as touching brotherly love, you need not that I write unto you, for ye yourselves are taught of God to love one another. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words. We ought to be ready to see the tear in the eye and do what we can to comfort the brethren. And again, wherefore, comfort yourselves together and edify, build up one another, even as also ye do. The author to the Hebrews says, but exhort one another daily. This is that encouragement to do right, the encouragement to do better. While it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. And then again, let us consider one another. And this means to evaluate, to think it through, to look at what the person has on their plate, what's going on in their life. Consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. And the day is approaching. I don't think we need to argue that point. You look around, you see. And you recognize then that here, this provoking, considering one another to provoke them unto love and good works, and exhorting one another, the same in the meaning. Peter, writing to those who are under persecution, says, seeing you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit unto unfeigned, unpretended love of the brethren, see that you love one another with a pure heart fervently. There are people who approach with a loving heart, But it's to see if they can sell you insurance or some other less than pure motive. The pure motive is, can I help them take a step up? Can I help them overcome some problem? Again, 1 Peter 5:14, greet ye one another with a kiss of charity, kiss of love. In 1 John, John the apostle of love has much to say about what we do with one another. For this is the message that you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. This is his commandment, that we should believe on the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another as he gave us commandment. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. No man hath seen God at any time. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. And 2 John, now I beseech thee, lady, not as though I wrote a new commandment unto thee, but that which we had from the beginning, that we love one another. All right, fairly complete list, and I think the impact ought to be upon us that we are careful to notice one another. It is, I don't have to explain this to you, but it's so easy to come to church centered on self, my problems, my needs, and to sit there and say, how come nobody's paying attention to me? And it's the wrong procedure. In fact, one of the great blessings of relief from your burden is to come and forget yourself. Just don't even worry about it and deal with them. I have found, personally, in the role of pastor, that many times talking to somebody about their problem, and there's something that happens when people share with you their problems, your mind begins listening to them and over here flipping through the Bible mentally, and you're finding what here meets the need that I'm listening to. When I'm done, sometimes I'm thinking, hey, that was pretty good. I hadn't thought of that before till that situation came up. And that helps me. So there is a way back to getting your own problem solved just by being that helping hand to others. All right. The day for corporate worship, every day is the day for worship, but corporate body worship, when we come together, we see the origin of the Lord's Day. Paul cautioned us to be tolerant of those who choose to worship on other days. This is not one of those things where we must condemn Seventh-day Adventism because they worship on Saturday. Listen to what he says. Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? To his own master he standeth or falleth. Yea, he shall be holden up, for God is able to make him stand. One man esteemeth one day above another, another esteemeth every day alike. Let every man, and here's the key, be fully persuaded in his own mind. So do we have a reason why we choose Sunday? Yes, we do. Do we have biblical example? Yes, we do. Do we have then the ability to be fully persuaded in our thinking that Sunday is the right day? Yes, we do. However, that's the point. Be fully persuaded in your own mind. He that regardeth the day regardeth it unto the Lord. He that regardeth not the day, to the Lord he doth not regard it. He, in fact, the way it should be is that the correct person looking at talking to the Seventh-day Adventist says, well, I have no real problem with you worshiping on this Saturday. And they would say, we have a real problem with you worshiping on Sunday. See, you've abandoned the law, they would say, usually. So, we want to do it the right way. he that regardeth not today, to the Lord he doth not regard it. He that eateth, the thing that's questionable, eateth to the Lord, for he giveth God thanks. And he that eateth not, to the Lord he eateth not, and giveth God thanks. So with that in mind, we recognize that this is not one of those do or die standards. If you were forced to worship God on another day, and some places persecution comes to the place where they can't meet openly on Sunday. But that's not a violation of the Word of God. But there is the distinctiveness of the Lord's Day. The New Testament church met on Sundays because Christ rose on the first day of the week, and I think practically because the Sabbath day was particularly for Israel's worship. And so the places of worship where they would meet were already busy doing something. We see Matthew 28:1, at the end of the Sabbath, as it began to dawn toward the first day of the week, came Mary Magdalene, the other Mary, to see the sepulcher. In Mark 16:9, now when Jesus was risen early the first day of the week, so we know that's when he rose. The New Testament records the consistent practice of the early church. Again, I say, not a commandment here, but it is the consistent practice of the early church. So if you have any choice, I think we would choose what they chose. In Acts 20:7, upon the first day of the week when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached unto them. That's when they met. 1 Corinthians 16:2, upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. So he says, set this money aside, the special money for this offering that we're going to take to the Jews. When you meet on Sundays, set that money aside. Do it every week. All right, what about the activities of the Lord's Day? Well, the church was to gather. That's what church really means. That's what it does. To be edified, built up, to minister to one another. However, precise decisions about activities were left to the church to decide. This is quite an open area that the Lord gave us. This is why we do not have, from a biblical standpoint, we don't have a cultural mandate about the church, that the church can fit and form into whatever culture, just purify that culture, take the sin out of that culture. And so you have, you know, the particular form of music, the particular way of being seated, all these things, the particular way of dress, all of these things can be left to the church to decide. And then let me close by preaching a bit the contemporary neglect of the Lord's Day. If you listen to the commercials, you'll find out what weekends were made for: drinking beer. That's what they say. And people say, I can't come to church because Sunday is the only day I get to sleep in. And so the attitude of Sunday, of the Lord's Day, has been entirely taken over by recreation. This is when the races are, this is when the golf tournaments are, this is when all these things are going on. And we as Christians are being affected by that. It was the Judeo-Christian time of meeting that gave the modern society their weekend. Saturday for the Jew, Sunday for the Christian. Christians ought to fight the sinful tendency to abandon church for entertainment. Many a morning service has been missed because of a late Saturday night activity. Your submission to God in going to church begins with a good rest the night before. The neglect of going to church is an arrogant supposition that we do not need to obey God and that his way is not best for us. Our way is best, we say. Experience has shown that a believer cannot coast in his Christian life. And then the example I gave you, like a glowing coal of a fire, when set by itself, it will grow cold and die. We need the interaction with believers and the conviction of the preached word of God. And this is what God said. So if you look back on that list of verses, Hebrews 10, 24 and 25, he says in verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is. And he says, this is a thing that you just ought not do. Don't forsake it. Today, I read article after article saying the church has failed. We need to be doing something else. And the only way the church fails is when people fail to do what God says the church ought to be. All right. Thank you.